You thought you knew, but you have no idea. It's the urban sports scene.
You are listening to the urban sports scene with myself, Wole, Will T, and Ray Jeezy. What's going on, fellas?
Nothing much.
Nothing,
man.
Now. Football season over.
What's up, Will T?
Now the best time of the year starts. I'm good. Best time of the year starts. NBA season.
March Madness.
You know, even though it already started, you know, we're really getting into the heart of the season.
So facts.
I'm excited.
Mark, you said
March Madness, Will?
March Madness, is it the same? Is it the same, you know? Is it really the same?
Nothing is the same.
I'm just going to be college sports is not the same without the crowd. The crowd plays a lot into the atmosphere and, you know, tempo of the game. It just isn't the same. Unless you're watching, like, really high-level college basketball.
Yeah. I do think in terms – and this is a whole different discussion, but I do think in terms of what the NBA did with the bubble, you can kind of do that with the tournament, right? Because they're in selected arenas anyway. If they could do something like that, I think it would be kind of dope. But, yeah.
No, you can't do that because the athletes still have to attend class during the week.
True.
So,
yeah. Online classes, Will, they can do it.
I think it's too much risk with college students. Look at the North Carolina and Duke. We had after North Carolina's victory against Duke on Saturday, there were videos of UNC players going out to celebrate without a mask, and that's why the Miami and UNC game was delayed on Monday.
It's tough, man. Especially again when you're dealing with kids and whatnot. You know what I mean? It's just a tough situation. But yeah, man. I mean, the term is always my thing, but I don't know if it's going to be. It's hard. It's going to be hard to have that same impact because I'm not even like. To me, the whole college season is different. Like Duke sucks. Carolina's iffy. Kentucky ain't really good. It's just the season just looks. It's just all whack. It's all jacked up.
Well,
yeah, I had no.
That UConn women's game was awesome last night. So there's a way.
Yeah.
It's just a matter of the networks doing a good job of covering the event and broadcasting it, which I feel like the NFL overcame some issues. The NBA's overcome. Baseball's overcome. I think college basketball can do the same.
Definitely. All right. You listen to Herb Sports, and you're also part of Sports Journey. You can check us out at sportsjourney.com. You'll find all kinds of sports content, especially for your DMV teams. Subscribe to our podcast on Stitcher, Spotify, iTunes, TuneIn, also iHeartRadio and Google Podcasts. Just search the Urban Sports Scene. Also tweet us at Urban Sports Scene and hit us up on our Urban Sports Scene Facebook page. Also join our Urban Sports Scene Facebook group. Search Urban Sports Scene, sports bloggers, sports podcasters, and sports debates. Will T.
Into our tradition of pregame.
Here's what we have on tap. We'll talk about Tom Brady and the Tampa Bay Buccaneers defeating the Kansas City Chiefs in Super Bowl 55 at 8:20. We'll talk about Washington Wizards guard Bradley Beal leading the Eastern Conference guards in NBA All-Star voting at 8:35. We'll talk about the rumor that the Washington Wizards will pursue Toronto Raptors president Masai Ujiri. Finally, at 8:50, Talk Nats Kevin Nibley will join us to discuss the Washington Nationals offseason moves. But first, in Super Bowl 55, the Tampa Bay Buccaneers defeated the Kansas City Chiefs 31-9. Tampa Bay's quarterback Tom Brady was Super Bowl MVP. Thoughts on the game? I'm going to start with Will.
Eric Bieniemy and Andy Reid made a huge misstep from my perspective. And that misstep was not running the ball when Tampa Bay played so much too high safety. With playing their safeties back. When you have a dynamic running back such as Edwards,
even Williams.
Hilaire, I just think that, you know, there was an opportunity for them to use him in the run game a lot more. I'm not a conspiracy theorist by no means, and I'm not going to infer that with this next statement, but the refs' calls, some of those calls were a bit much, if you ask me.
Right.
Particularly the Vincent, the the Mike Evans pass interference.
Oh God.
That was a terrible call.
Was that with the interception? Is that when the interception happened? Or was that the that was the hold? That was the hold, right?
That was the hold.
Yeah. Ray?
Raymond.
Oh, there's a good angel on my right shoulder telling me the obvious, which is that Kansas City's O-line was banged up. Mm-hmm. The Bucks had an amazing game plan, and the Chiefs failed to run the football, like Will said, and they failed to make adjustments. However, there is the angel on my left shoulder who I'll call the contrarian. I'll call him the contrarian. I'm not going to say the other word because questionable officiating, like Will just alluded to, and I'm sorry, Will, for saying this, but questionable officiating can swing momentum, dude. And when the Saints were robbed in the NFC Championship game against the Rams, they never regained their composure because momentum was gone. Another example that doesn't involve the refs is the Ravens. They were in complete control against the 49ers in 2013, Super Bowl 47. Then a strange blackout just swung the whole pendulum of that game, and San Fran nearly completed the comeback. So I'm thinking to myself, which angel is right? Is it the one on my right or the one on my left shoulder? Y'all tell me.
Oh, I think the one with the conspiracy theory should be the one on the angel go with. Because I just feel like, dog, I believe my memory serves me right. I think in the first half it was Tampa Bay only had one penalty for 5 yards, and Kansas City had about 6 for 95 yards. I think about 95 yards. And I'm sitting there thinking to myself, like, all right, the holds you're calling in this game, like, the Tampa Bay secondary was doing the same exact stuff to Kansas City. They showed you clips. They did the same exact stuff, and the refs didn't call any of that. And most of those stuff were ticky-tack fouls. Like Will said, the pass interference on two levels was ridiculous. One, it was barely passed. I didn't think it was pass interference. The second, the ball wasn't even catchable. Like, so if you're going to call anything in that particular play, you're going to call a 5 yard. You should call hold. You should call the hold for 5 yards. Instead, you called the pass interference. Like, that was an uncatchable football. So calling a pass, a PI, was ridiculous. Then the interception Brady threw. Mike Evans did most of the hand joshing and it jockling, and then it was an interception that had to be reversed. Brady gets the ball back and has a touchdown on that drive. It's like, dude, like, y'all were doing so much, like, so much, and Tampa Bay Kansas City couldn't do anything to get momentum, because at that particular point in time, like, every call was huge. Like, every call led to, like, a scoring play. So and into a situation where if they, you know, I think on multiple occasions it was a big third down with a stop and a penalty and a flag came out. So to me, it was huge. Like, what they did in the first half in terms of reffing, it was horrific, bro. It was horrific. Nothing. And I was telling my friends, I was like, it don't even matter what they do in the second half. Like, they could try to even, they're gonna try to balance the calls out. But in that first half, they already set the table, bro.
Yeah, the score shouldn't have been as wide of a margin at halftime, if you ask me.
Yeah.
But over 96 million people watch the Super Bowl, according to numbers, mm-hmm. which is great. But I feel as though the entertainment value was damaged because of the officiating and what appeared to be slanted calls. Tyrann Mathieu said on Twitter after the game, I was clearly walking off the field. Tom Brady's chasing me, and I get flagged, and he doesn't.
Oh,
when Jansen starts a fight, I know the old saying is, The second guy always gets caught. But I feel as though, again, it was not one, not two, but it was multiple calls. That's how LeBron now. Not one, not two, not three, not four, not five, not six. They were the calls were so one-sided that you had to question. And then Tony Romo clearly works for the NFL because he's like, yep, that's a call. And how many Chiefs games did we see this season? A lot, because they played on national TV.
Yeah.
When did you ever remember a commentator say, they hold all the time?
Yeah.
He kept saying that.
Yeah.
I just feel as though the NFL had this narrative that was already written before the game, and it played out. Although, you know, Tom Brady did make plays,
and again,
the Chiefs didn't run the football, like Will said, and they didn't make adjustments, as I alluded to. Mm-hmm. So the Chiefs have a role to play in it. But in terms of momentum, I mentioned the Saints. I know, Wally, you're not a big Saints fan, so you kept saying Sean Payton had opportunities in that game to still win, but they couldn't get over the call.
Yeah.
And I feel as though Kansas City, they couldn't get over the first half. They really couldn't.
But it gets
they were clearly affected emotionally, too. You could tell by their body language, by the frustration that was playing out in the sideline.
But I want to give a point that you made, though, Ray. Like, the second dude always gets caught. You're right. And I believe in that first or second drive, when they scored, it was the first or second drive, whatever. They got a 15-yard penalty, and the second dude got caught. Like, the second dude got caught. Like, they got a 15-yard penalty. The old lineman was pushing around the D tackle, the DN. I forgot the DN's name. But he smacked the O-line back. Like, and then he got called for the 15-yard penalty. Fast forward, Tom Brady is the second dude chasing. He's chasing down Tyrann Mathieu, but Tyrann Mathieu is the dude that gets caught. You know what I mean? There's no consistency. You know what I'm saying? Like, that was my issue. Like, if you're going to call it one way, then be consistent throughout the whole game on both sides. But they weren't. The officiating just wasn't consistent at all. That's what annoyed me about the game. Like,
gotta be happy for Ty Bowles, though. Go ahead, though, Will. Sorry.
That was my point I was just about to make. You know, even though the team that I wanted to win didn't win,
mm-hmm.
I'm definitely happy for Tampa Bay, specifically mm-hmm. the coaching staff.
Of course.
Bruce Arians, Todd Bowles, and Byron Leftwich, you know, I don't know any of them, but they seem like really good guys, genuine guys. They're really good coaches from what I see, their interaction with the players and also the game plan they put together. So I'm just happy that they were able to get a ring. But, you know, just to reiterate, which both of you said, this Super Bowl, the officiating definitely is going to leave a black eye on this game for a lot of fans.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think even Boomer Esiason said something at halftime. Was like the officiating they were doing too much. So it was out there. It wasn't just like, yeah, Tony Romo was being, like Ray said, he's working for the NFL. But you have folks even on that telecast, on that CBS team, that were like, yo, this is kind of iffy. So it tells you a lot about how that game was officiated in the first half. You're listening to the Urban Sports Team, part of Sports Journey, sportsjourney.com. So Brady was Super Bowl MVP. Do you believe he was worthy of being Super Bowl MVP? I'm going to start with Ray.
No, clearly it was the defensive unit as a whole.
Yeah.
Top QB in Mahomes, top tight end in Kelce, and one of the top receivers in the league in Tyreek Hill, and they didn't score one touchdown the entire game. Brady did nothing on the first two drives. Fortunately, neither did Kansas City, because the defense of Tampa stepped up.
Mm-hmm.
They need to handle this, in my opinion, like Madden used to handle the turducken. Remember on Thanksgiving when a whole old line could get the award?
Facts.
Everybody got a leg on that bird. I don't know what kind of bird that is. I wouldn't eat it.
That was a mutant bird.
That's
bro.
How I feel as though the award should be handled in this case. But again, the NFL knows what sells, and clearly Tom Brady does, because your Super Bowl numbers rose significantly this year. And they gave it to the guy that is the face of the league still.
Mm.
And last week I made the reference of Canelo and Mayweather. Mayweather, he beat the young guy. Exactly. We lost on this one, Pat.
Exactly, bro. So Pacquiao, right? Go ahead. Go ahead, Will.
was he the most deserving player from Tampa Bay to receive the award? No.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, as Ray stated, you can't give the Super Bowl MVP typically goes to one player.
Mm-hmm.
So just looking, taking out everything in an aggregate, I'll say if you had to give it to one player, it was Tom Brady. But
definitely.
For me, it was a very close tie between Brady and Leonard Fournette.
Yeah.
Mm, very close.
Fournette was what's the
Tom? Yeah.
Yeah, I think that's a good
Tom Brady was 21 of 29. Only 201 yards passing, 3 touchdowns. I know the 3 touchdowns is what put him over the top for everyone, yeah. But Leonard Fournette, when he came in and he ran the ball, he definitely maintained the pace
mm-hmm.
for that team. And also his play, you know, his ability to catch passes out of the backfield played a key role.
Yeah, Leonard Fournette, he was nasty in the game. Him and also – jeez, what's his face? I'm thinking about it. What's a defensive end for Tampa that was creating havoc all day?
Shaq Barrett.
I thought he should have got big time consideration, because he was always in the backfield on passing plays, though. Always. They had no answer for him. You know what I mean? He may have not got the sack, but he definitely got at times he got Mahomes he got Mahomes out of the pocket. Like, he forced Mahomes out of the pocket. You know, and he wasn't able to step into throws because of Barrett. So, yeah. It's definitely between those three. I feel like Ray said, the defense dominated the game. The defense was the MVP, and I would have preferred to have somebody on the defense side of the football, you know, win the honors of Super Bowl MVP, because just the fact that, again, you're looking at the Kansas City Chiefs offense, one of the more dynamic offense in the game of football, and they didn't score a single touchdown, and they held them to 9 points, and they dominated. They didn't just beat them; they just dominated.
That's a good point, but at the same time, Wally, you do have to acknowledge that if a defensive player is going to get the MVP, typically that defensive player makes huge impact plays with regards to turnovers and accumulating multiple sacks.
Facts.
And Shaquille, Barrett, I think he only had one tackle and one sack, but. Yeah. You know, he had like four or five quarterback hits, and he was always, you know, he drew a lot of flags from the Kansas City Chiefs left tackles, yeah. Their tackles. So.
Now it was like you said, he had one sack, yeah, and Sue had one and a half. So, yeah, I mean, truth be told, yeah, the numbers, if he had like multiple sacks, definitely, I'm with you. I agree with you, Will, that he would have. Probably had it. He would have had a good chance. I don't think he would beat Brady, but he would have had a good chance. But again, it's tough though, right? You know, I mean, if you really, to me, if I wanted to give, it's not fair. But if I really wanted to give a Super Bowl MVP award to somebody, it would be Ty Bowles, because his game plan was lit. But you can't give it
the
to
the whole unit, bro. Yeah, turducken, baby.
Turducken. Bradley Beal, let's go to basketball. Bradley Beal leads the Eastern Conference guards in All-Star votes. We'll talk about that after the break. You're listening to the Urban Sports Lane.
For ages.
You dig?
Deuces.
You are listening to the Urban Sports Scene with Will T, Ray Jeezy, Wole, part of Sports Journey, sportsjourney.com. So, all right, so far, the Washington Wizards guard Bradley Beal leads all Eastern Conference guards in NBA All-Star voting. So far, do you feel like the fans have got it right? I'm going to start with Will.
You broke up, so I didn't hear
My bad, Will. So, do you think so far Bradley Beal leads the Eastern Conference guards in voting? Do you think so far that the fans got it right? Would he be your starting guard in the All-Star game if it was up to you?
I'm thinking about the Eastern Conference. Most likely, yeah. Even though, you know, the team sub 500. Mm. Isn't playing very well, but Bradley Beal, he's scoring a lot of buckets at a high clip. And you also have to take into account defenses. He's their number one primary focus. Mm-hmm. And he's averaging 35 points, which is extremely hard to do, especially with the lack of talent that's on that Wizards team. A close, and I don't even know if this guy would be considered a two, but, you know, it's either, for me, it's between him or Jaylen Brown.
See, that's, you got it. That's who I think should be starting. But go ahead, Ray. I'll let Ray go next.
The only thing I disagree with what you said, Will, is that defense is focused on Bradley Beal. There is no defense in the NBA right now. Will and I talked about this over the weekend. You saw Steph Curry go off, and you would think that he would be doubled. People would try to prevent him from getting the ball. It never happens. I don't know why. But anyway, absolutely, Bradley Beal is an all-star. All-star is an individual award, and he's having a historic season.
Yeah,
17 straight 25-point-plus games just behind Elgin Baylor and Rick Barry. That's historic, my friend. He deserves to be a starting all-star guard in the East. There's nobody better, except maybe, like you said, Jaylen Brown. And Chris Middleton is having a great season as well, but he plays with another top echelon player in Giannis. So I'm going with Brad for an all-star. It's not about the team in this case.
Yeah, it's like I think Brad is a starter. I just think Jaylen Brown, in terms of being a two-way player, and you saw what he did when Tatum was on the, when Tatum was gone. So, because a lot of people are like, he's the two, he's the number two player, but you know, he had an opportunity to show what he can do with Jason Tatum, out for a couple, for like some games and whatnot, for several games, and he played at a high level. You know what I mean? He was shooting the ball over 50%. He was scoring up, averaging up close to 27, 30 points a game. He just was playing. He was playing at such a high level. We already know he can play. You know, he can strap as well. I think, and his team is winning. He's just a guy that I think deserves a lot of credit. Boston, or some of many of the, I say Boston, but many of the national media, they always give Jason Tatum the love because, they deem him as that, as the player to be, the player to be in terms of the future. But when you look at what Jaylen Brown has done, and he's gotten better every year, and what he's done this season, and how efficient he has been, oh man, and we already know, like I said, he can strap. To me, he's a guy that, and to me, embodies a basketball player and an all-star caliber player, a guy that you can definitely lean on.
Well, I guess at this point, would you say that it benefits him being on a better team, since Brad, like Will kind of said, is the focal point?
I feel like on bad teams, people put up numbers. I mean, not to be dirty about it, but they do. They put up numbers.
That's a good point.
For instance, look, Bradley Beal, his field goal percentage. He's a baller. Don't get it twisted. Bradley Beal deserves to be an all-star. Bradley Beal shooting, I think his shooting percentage is 47%. Which is good.
Great.
It's not bad. Which is good. Do you know what Zach LaVine's shooting percentage is? And he only with less shots.
What's that?
It's 50.
What's 30?
It's 50. Oh. Zach LaVine shoots 50% from the field goal from the field.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I'm saying? It's less shots. You know what I'm saying? So it just depends on how your offense is situated, whatnot. And not this again. I'm not taking anything away from Bradley Beal. Bradley Beal is an all star. But when we've seen this on bad teams, you have players who can score the rock. I love Booker, but you see Booker's numbers have went down because you're playing with a better team now. Like, you got Chris Paul now holding the rock. Booker was giving you 70 in other games, and what he's not even doing that. But now he has to play a different role because it's about winning basketball. So when you're playing on a bad team and there's games you're getting blown out, you're gonna put up numbers because one, you're gonna score because that's what you. Now it gets to a point where all you worried about is scoring. There was a game with Bill was playing where the Wizards were getting blown out, and you could tell he was stacked. He was going for stats. Nothing wrong with that. If you're getting blown out, you might as well go for stats. But I'm just saying, like, it's different when you're on a winning basketball team. You're not going to have those numbers as often. Like, Steph Curry getting those numbers and winning, you see a difference when Bradley Beal getting those numbers and losing. There's a difference.
Well, let me ask you this. Bradley Beal's averaging 33 points per game this year. Will we look back at Bradley Beal's time in D.C. over the, last 2 years? Last year he averaged 30. This year he's averaging 33. We look back on his time here in D.C. and say he was just a scorer? Or will we look back and say Bradley Beal was one of the top two guards in the league during his period?
I would say he was a scorer. You have greats at the two guard position that we talk about over the years, and they weren't just scorers. You know what I'm saying? Unless, other than maybe James Harden, but James Harden was winning. But you look at Kobe, Jordan, you know what I'm saying? Like, a lot of these two guards that we've seen in the past, they weren't just scorers. They can actually hold their own within, you know, playing their position. You know what I'm saying? So when you look at Bill, you're going to say he's a great scorer. I think that's fair to say. Nothing. Again, he's really good at scoring. You know what I'm saying? Like, he's great. Not really good. He's great at scoring. So that's nothing to take away from it. He's great at scoring. But we're talking about winning basketball games. Is he a player? If we're going to go off track record for what it is, and we obviously know that Scott Brooks plays a part in it. So I get it. Like, Scott Brooks is a part of it. So I don't want to pile on Bradley Beal, because I know that Scott Brooks, if you put the element of Scott Brooks in it and some of the bad signings by the GM and the team, that plays a part. But at the end of the day, we look at track record, like, with this dude leading the squad, like, they're not winning. You know what I'm saying? Something's wrong. They're not winning basketball games, because we've seen on other teams, when you got a dude scoring like Bradley Beal scoring, you don't lose like this. You get what I'm saying? Like, you may not be the one seed, you may not be the two seed, but you're usually in a good slot to make the postseason. I'll give you a prime example. When Shaq left and Kobe took over the team, like, Kobe was jacking. But he had the Lakers as a 7-8 seed in the West. Like, usually you're when you're scoring at this type of clip, you're making the postseason. And so that's the thing, like, Bradley Beal situation, kind of, when you look at Bradley Beal, you're like, great scorer, but is he a winner? I'm not sure.
Nah, but see, you discount defense, because, like, the same could be said about AI. AI put up buckets, but his team's defended. The Lakers play defense because they had good coaches.
Yeah.
This coaching staff is questionable in my eyes.
Yeah.
I was questioning, I actually posted on Twitter whether Jarrell Christian should be the interim coach if Scott Brooks were to get fired. But anyway, I'm going to take it a step further to answer your question. I think Bradley Beal leaves here, or he retires as the greatest Wizard/Bullet of all time. Mm-hmm. Now, that might not be saying much, because we grew up watching the Bullet, so we already know the history. Wes Unseld obviously won a ring, but outside of Gil and John Wall, who can you think of that has been better and put up the numbers he has? I feel as though he's going to remember the score, yes, but he's going to remember as the greatest ever done it here in this franchise.
Ooh, that's tough. Will, I'll let you go with that one. Will, I'll let you tackle that response.
See, V, I'm not a big fan of empty stats.
Yes.
Right. You know, true, you know, he'll, you know, average 30 points twice, you know, 2 years in a row consecutively, but it all boils down to, what have you done to uplift your team? Which I don't think we'll realistically be able to say he's done anything. Right now, granted, you know, we do have to take into account the lack of talent that's been around him.
Yeah.
But usually, you know, like Wally, like you said, usually when a guy scores this amount of points, he usually helps to propel the team to at least the eighth seed or there.
Mm-hmm.
In the playoffs. Last year, the abbreviated season, Washington was competing for the eighth seed. You know, they made it to the bubble, but, you know, a lot of injuries, Davis Bertans, who everyone said was the second best player, decided to sit out. So, you know, those are things you got to take into account, but Ray, you're right. When we look back on the time, we will have to say he's one of the greatest Bullet/Wizards ever. But, you know, it'll be hard for me to give him that number one spot, especially because this team, you know, those statistics didn't turn into wins.
Well, him and John Wall together, definitely, they put up some good numbers, and they actually elevated this franchise. And I always emphasize how we forgot about the Gilbert Arenas, Caron Butler, Antoine Jamison days.
And Larry Hughes.
Exactly, because we had Brad and John. You know, that's what sucks. I feel like because of injuries, first it was Brad that had an injury history, then John obviously had his string of injuries. But we never saw them fully healthy for a sustained period, which sucks, because I just feel as though that duo was probably – I'll say it's the best in basketball. They were the best backcourt in basketball for a while. And I just hate the fact that John got injured that 1 year where they looked proud to make a deep playoff run.
Yeah.
Where he injured his hand against the Hawks. So Brad, the thing about him is, while we didn't like him handling the ball.
Yeah, he got so much better. I agree.
Came out of Florida, but he gets better every season. And I know that sometimes empty stats, but I truly believe that he's trying to help the team claw back. Against New Orleans, they climbed back. He was scoring the ball. He takes over games for the team. I know he has to, and sometimes the opponent may relax. But Bradley Beal has improved every season as a basketball player. John Wall, we saw the response in the community when he left. Brad, in my opinion, is just as influential in the community in the DMV. And I just think overall, man, he's going to be remembered as the guy at the top spot. I don't know who you can put ahead of him. Just based on our discussion.
I think I would put it.
Michael Adams.
No, back the greatest Wizards. The more Cal impactful. Bichini. Yeah, I guess it's hard. I think the difference is like, are we saying to me the most impactful Wizard? I mean, and I'm a little biased. Is like Gil. Like I feel like Gil was like the most impactful Wizard
really?
That I've seen. Yeah, because we all play ball. We see ball. We know what it is. Like when Gil scored, like he dominated the game. Like there was no other. Like, he can win against Kobe and went to L.A., he dominated that game. Like, Kobe and Gil dominated. Kobe was balling, but Gil dominated that game. Like, when you see a player like that, and I'm talking about when they're healthy, a player like that, when he can go against any dog, period, and you feel like, yo, we got that dude. Like, we good. Like, we got that dude. Like, that it's a difference. Like, it is a difference. When the Wizards play, and I know, again, it's a team game. I'm not taking that away from anything, but when the Wizards play against like Miami or they're playing against the Warriors, you're not feeling like Brad going to pull it out. You don't have that feeling. Like you just don't. Regardless of what the situation is, you don't feel like Brad's going to pull it out. When Gil was out there, you were like, Gil's going to pull this out. Like you just felt that. Like I'm not even like a Wizards Bullets fan, but when Gil played anybody, like you were like, yo, a healthy Gil, you like, yo, he about to get this. Same thing like with John Wall. And the Bill, like that backcourt, you felt confident. But Bill by himself, you can't say that you feel like when they play against the Lakers or they're playing against, they're going to Eastern Conference, they're playing against Milwaukee, they're playing against they're doing well against the Nets, they play very well. But against teams of that sort, like you don't feel like, hey, Brad about to pull this out. Like Brad can go ham and take over this game. When you saw Gil, you were like, Gil's going to take over this whole game.
I agree in the sense that I think Gil definitely had more star power than Brad. Like when the Cavs played the Wizards, it was Gil versus LeBron.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying? And right now, the matchup, of course, because Brad is the guy, is Brad versus whoever the other star is. But at the same time, with Westbrook on the squad, some may argue, no, Westbrook is the biggest star on the team, which he might be based on his career, based on how much he's achieved. All-star games, winning, finals appearance. So Brad doesn't match Gil in terms of star power. I would agree with that. But because of the way Gil's tenure ended, I think that stains his ability to be the best of all time in terms of the Wizards / Bullets, which, again, may not be saying much considering the history, unfortunately.
All right, man. Another Wizard topic. Mazi Ujiri to D.C.? Could happen, maybe. It's a rumor. We'll talk about the rumor about this going down after the break. You're listening to the Urban Sports Scene.
My agent.
Yeah, dig.
Deuces.
Listening to the Urban Sports Scene with Will T, Ray Jeezy, myself, Wole, part of Sports Journey, sportsjourney.com. So this feels good. This is like a Niger store. Oh, man, excuse me. Oh, no. Feel good. This is like a whole, like, Niger story. Got my man, Mazi Ujiri. All right. There is a rumor that the Washington Wizards plan to pursue Mazi Ujiri in the offseason. Mazi Ujiri is the president of the Toronto Raptors. Thoughts on this, Will T?
I mean, didn't we have this conversation like 2 years ago?
Yeah, it's out there now. This is a new rumor now, bro. They bringing it back. Bring it back.
I'm not really interested in having the same conversation we had 2 years ago, personally, because I don't. I'm just being honest. You know, we saw how it worked out 2 years ago.
Yeah.
I'm not inclined to think that it's going to change anything different. It's going to change. You know. If you're Masai Ujiri, why would you come to DC?
Yes, I'm trying to figure out.
let's be honest. In Toronto, you are looked at from, you know, as a guy who brought a championship to that country, and you built and you pretty much built the franchise, you built the culture. I just think that there's, you know, I don't see why you would come to DC unless you're at a point in your career and life where you want another big challenge. But if we're just looking at that Toronto Raptors roster, you still have, you have another couple years of a challenge ahead of you because Kyle Lowry is getting towards the end of his career. You have a couple of young promising players that are starting to ascend with OG Anunoby and also Chris Boucher. So why come to DC when you have, you know, a challenge in front of you in Toronto? Just it wouldn't make sense unless that, you know, he's fallen out of favor with the ownership. Mm.
Ray?
Will T, what talks, my brother? It's called money. You throw the bag at him, I believe you can get him to come here. And yes, clearly it'll be a good move because Masai Ujiri teams have what? Wait for it, fam. Sustained success. Didn't we talk about that last week? He makes ballsy moves. It includes, of course, trading his star player, DeMar DeRozan, and he fired Dwayne Casey, who was not a bad coach. Does that sound like something that could happen here? A star player possibly being traded, a coach being fired. It sounds like more of a need here than it did with Toronto, but he did that in order for them to win, and it worked out for him. And that type of decision-making is something that we could possibly use here. I think also he could convince certain coaches that lineups consisting of Westbrook, Raul Nettle, and Ish don't work because defense with a small lineup like that is just that. It's an Ish. And we don't need that type of basketball around here no more. So maybe I'm desperate as a Washington Wizards fan that Ujiri will be agreeable to accept this job. But right now, it doesn't look too attractive.
Yeah.
Well, let me ask you this, Ray. Let me counter what you just said with this. Okay.
Sure.
You prior to them hiring Tommy Shepard as the GM and, you know, the changes they made within the front office, you had probably the guy. You had the guy who taught Masai Ujiri a lot of the things he knows, and Tim Connelly, the president of basketball operations for the Denver Nuggets.
Yeah,
he said he wanted to come to DC. He said that was the only job he would leave Denver for, and he decided to stay in Denver. So why do you think if you couldn't get that guy, the guy who wanted to be in DC, a guy who's had sustained success with the Denver Nuggets, built them up to the point to where they are now, how do you think you can get a guy who wanted to be here? How do you think you're going to be able to attract a guy, Masai Ujiri, who, let's be honest, isn't necessarily in love with the potential prospect of coming to DC?
Okay, how I counter that is, right now, to be honest, Toronto is looking closer to a rebuild, right? So if Ujiri were to leave Toronto, I don't think it's like a huge step down to come to the Wizards, because the Wizards do have some good young pieces in Rui and in Denny. And they'll possibly, I'm hoping that, but they'll possibly have a top pick, which I will hope will be Jonathan Kuminga. Draft your countryman, even though as a fan, I'm hoping that they can make a run because they have the talent. It's just, you know, the coaching situation is messed up. But Connelly, on the other hand, his situation in Denver is so much better. He had a young nucleus already. You talk about Gary Harris, Jokic. I wouldn't have left that situation either. So he made the right choice, but Ujiri will be making too much of I can't say it's a lateral move, but I think it's not, like I said, it's not like a huge step down, because the Wizards do have talent. And outside of like Pascal Siakam and Anunoby, I don't know how you build with the current roster in Toronto. It looks like they're going to start
Toronto, I heard
Kyle Lowry might be
Boucher. Yeah.
Chris Boucher, he's going to develop into
Van Fleet.
An extremely good player.
And Van Fleet.
he's good. I ain't gonna lie, but that's good, not bro. Somebody I'm looking like build around. He's a very good piece.
Look, man, it's like it's hard.
He's
a piece. I mean, it's hard, right? Because the Wizards, you look at their situation. Not to say, because we're close to the situation. I guess if you're in Toronto, they would feel the same way about their situation. But if you look at the Wizards and their talent pool, they should be better, but I'm not sure how they stack up against other teams. They should be better. I like Rui. I think Rui could be a really good basketball player. It's just that, you know, for whatever Scott Brooks is doing with Rui and some of the talent, it ain't working out all the way. And also you got Denny, and I feel like he could be better. I think he could be better. But his game is kind of to me, he doesn't have a left hand. He goes right all the way, all the time. So I kind of want to see him in the offseason, to be honest with you, because I want to see him get. I think he can get better.
He's young.
He's young though. Yeah,
he's
that's
so
true.
Young. Mm-hmm. Yeah,
but he got ability though.
Yeah, he's only 19.
Yeah, he got ability.
He's 19 years old.
He got ability. I'm not taking that away from. So it depends on what Messiah thinks. You know what I'm saying? This team. It just depends. Like what is his thought process of what he can do. To get this team, you know, to build this team into a contender, because that's all it is. Like, you know, all these GMs, they have egos, right? They want to be, they do want to get a team that's bad and build them up so everybody can say, you know what, look at me, look what I did with this organization. You know what I'm saying? So that also plays a part. Like, I know we look at the Wizards and say, well, yeah, or Toronto. Some may compare and say, well, Toronto was a championship team. They go to the postseason. They're already at this particular level, but some GMs may look at the Wizards situation and they're like, you know what? I'm gonna build this thing up, and then it's going to improve my brand as a general manager, president. It's gonna make me look even better if I get this team to one, compete, and two, to compete for a championship. So he may look at this Wizards team like that, like, hey, this is an opportunity to prove myself even more.
He's had some misses, but he's been better than Tommy Shepard and Ernie combined. I mean, Ernie's drafts were the worst, and he traded away everything. Marquise Morris, Bogdanovich, he traded picks all the time. I think Jerry would build this Wizards program or franchise the right way. And honestly, I don't discount the fact that D.C. is a good destination to reside and to implement other business strategies in your life outside of whatever you're doing in the NBA. So I think it's a possibility. The rumor, because I know I sent you an article about it too, Ole. The main purpose of the article was to identify that Tommy Shepard, his place is insecure. He was almost looked at as kind of an interim guy anyway, mm-hmm. or Ernie Jr., so to speak. So I don't know if that is who Ted is committed to. But let's not discount the role that Ted has played in this organization too.
Exactly, that's what I want to say.
That have hurt this franchise, and agreed. Many believe that he was behind the wall trade. He was behind Troy Weaver not coming to DC.
Mm-hmm.
So, because he's been successful as an owner when it comes to the Capitals, he gets sort of a pass, I believe, from the media.
Agree.
And the DC media just ain't that type of group, you know. But we can't discount that. Maybe people don't want to work for him, and that may hurt the opportunity for the Wizards to hire a really good general manager or president.
I think he needs to. The people need to start looking at him as the owner, like in terms of why this team, this basketball organization, isn't winning. I think we all. I mean, obviously, we're gonna always target the general manager, but still, at the same time, I think Ted plays a part too. I agree, Ray. I think Ted plays a part big time.
Mm-hmm.
On Twitter, about, you know, Masai Ujiri, my man, at Black Martian 33 said absolutely Slim has a serious eye for talent. Van Fleet undrafted, Siakam groomed since a young boy in Cameroon, getting Kawhi on a 1-year rental, OG from London, St. Lucian, a kid, Chris Boucher, who Will was referring to, a 2-time champ, improves every year, vicious shot blocker, stupid hops, and can shoot the tray. Yeah, I mean, he obviously, you know, when you look at his background in not getting like the, you know, the well-known first round pick that everybody falls in love with. He gets guys that, you know, from the NBA Africa program. He's gotten guys from, you know, in the draft and later rounds, undrafted dudes. He's gotten dudes the ball for him, and he's gotten dudes that who have the drive to get better every year. I think that's very important. And it's hard, and that's hard to find, right? To locate a kid that isn't cool with just where he's at and where he's going to be in the league. He's old. He's getting kids who are trying to get better every year. And that's something that we take for granted. There are basketball players that don't act that way. And the guys that he draft are guys who are trying to get better every year. So he has an eye for that. Like Masai Ujiri has an eye of developing, getting that type of talent.
I agree just because of the results.
Yeah.
That's what we just talked about. Brad is obviously a top player in the NBA, but because the team hasn't achieved the results, it's sort of a stain on that, or it's an asterisk by it. Mm-hmm. But with Usai Ujiri, that's right. Masai Ujiri.
Yeah, you're right. Masai Ujiri.
The results are there, and you can't argue with numbers. You cannot argue with that. But again, it's just a lot of factors that will come to play in order to get him to come here. Right now, I think to Will's point, he probably will agree to stay in Toronto and continue to build with that young group, even though, like I said, I still think the Wizards have a talented team. So it'll be interesting to see the decisions that Ted makes going forward, because it's ultimately up to him, and he needs to make some money. And like I said, I heard the Wizards have lost money over the past couple of seasons, although I know Aaron Frankovic said that TV deal is massive. That's all he said. You know, he was kind of disagreeing with
it. I know, he was, dude.
I'm as a fan of the Wizards, I want to see, like I said, sustained success, and competing. A team that's competing.
Yeah.
You know, we've had too many teams that just don't compete. It's unfortunate.
And also on Twitter, my man Todd said, this team won't work with Uncle Ted here. So to your point, man, people are starting to look at Ted Leonsis is maybe a problem.
Right on point.
I mean, he could be a problem, but Let's go to baseball. The Nats made major moves this offseason. Talk Nats. Kevin Nibley will join us to discuss this after the break. You're listening to the Urban Sports Scene.
The Ages.
You dig?
Deuces.
Listening to the Urban Sports Scene with Will T, Ray Jeezy, myself, Wole. Will T stepped out. We're also part of Sports Journey, sportsjourney.com. All right. Right now, we have Kevin Nibley from Talk Nets, on the line. What's going on, Kevin? Welcome back, my man.
Hey, thanks for having me, guys. Appreciate it.
Oh, it's a pleasure, man. You know
what? Absolutely.
I wanted to have you back on earlier because, you know, the Nats were making so many big moves, especially, you know, after last season they lost, the year before that. I mean, they lost Rendon in the offseason last year, and, you know, they really didn't have any substitutes. But now it looks like the Nats are making big moves. The Nats added first baseman Josh Bell in the offseason. How big was that acquisition?
I think it's a pretty big acquisition because before we got Bell, you know, basically the position last year was going to be a platoon between Howie Kendrick and Ryan Zimmerman. Ryan Zimmerman ended up opting out of the season, so he wasn't even in the mix. And as we know, Howie was injured or ineffective for a lot of, you know, the season. So first base NDC has been a position for a long time, basically since Ryan Zimmerman's prime, or since, you know, Ryan Zimmerman 2017, or before that, Adam LaRoche had a good year or two. But first base has always been a position the Nats have cobbled together, you know, the last half decade or so, where Bell is the first time in a while they've gotten a first baseman who you can hopefully pencil in there for, you know, 140 games, and hopefully he can return to his 2019 levels and, you know, have an all-star level season.
It should, but shouldn't it work better for him since he's going to have, you know, he's going to have Juan Soto. He's going to have more protections, and vice versa. If he's hot, this could really be, I'm not to say he's going to be Anthony Rendon, but this could be the protection that they were looking for.
It's going to be interesting. The way that Rizzo, a lot of his acquisitions this year, you know, Bell, Schwarber, John Lester, a lot of these guys, you know, if you go to a Baseball Reference and you look at their 2020 seasons, you're like, ugh,
yeah, exactly.
not
yeah.
so good. Not but so good, yeah. if you look at their 2019 seasons, you're like, wow, these are some, you know, like Josh Bell had an amazing first half in 2019, was an all-star, you know, Kyle Schwarber had an amazing 2019, et cetera, et cetera. But yeah, you would think, you know, the lineup, you know, playing, you know, I'm not sure exactly where I'll hit, but whether he is behind Soto protecting him or maybe even better in front of Soto, you know, the Nats lineup's a little bit better than what the Pirates are offering. So there's a pretty good bounce back potential for Josh Bell. And he's still a relatively young guy. And, you know, maybe he had an off 2020, but a lot of, you know, a lot of people had an off 2020.
In all sports.
It's hard to read too much into 60 games.
I know, in all sports too. A lot of players had an off 2020. So Cal Schwarber, you mentioned him. Obviously he was, you know, he was a big stud before the injury with the Cubs. How can this signing, you know, affect this team? Like what do you think his role will be on this baseball team?
It's interesting. When they first got him, I thought, oh, maybe he would be our DH, because that's still up in the air to a point, whether or not last year the National League had a DH.
They want to keep a DH?
You know, all the years before they didn't. But as far as I know, as of right now, we're going back to the way it always was, and it will not be a DH, which means Schwarber will be in left field, presumably. And, you know, his bat is an interesting bat. He strikes out a lot, but he, you know, he can, in 2019, I want to say had about like 38 home runs somewhere in that neighborhood. He had an OPS, you know, in the high 800s, like 870, something like that. You know, and that's really what the Nats were missing last year, were bats in that 4-6 range, you know, guys who could hit a 3-run homer every once in a while. You know, last year when you look at them, they basically had Turner and Soto, and then the line, you know, it was like a black hole. I mean, we had Isdrubal Cabrera hitting third or fourth for a lot of last year, you know. So I do think Schwarber's a nice add. I think Rizzo has added some bats to the middle of the lineup that could be effective. There are bounce back candidates. Neither are great on defense, but you know what you're hoping is between Bell and Schwarber, you're hoping over a full season with a normal spring training, they can replicate what they did in 2019. And if they can, and they're still both young guys, they're still in their late 20s, and they're also playing for their next big contract. You know, if both of those guys can have good seasons, then yeah, that middle of the lineup looks pretty good. And at least with Rizzo, he has a track record. You know, remember he got Daniel Murphy around the same point in his career where, you know, he came here and then he had his best years here. So, you know, what you're hoping is that they're picking up Schwarber and Bell at a point where they'll have their best years here in D.C. behind Soto and with Turner, et cetera.
See, as an Oriole fan, it reminds me of what the Orioles used to do when, you know, they had their group of guys with Adam Jones, Nick Markakis, and Matt Wieters, but they did sprinkle in a Nelson Cruz. You know, they got guys who were, you know, had talent, you know, were at a point in time were one of the best players in the league. And then, you know, obviously they may have fizzled out a little bit, but they kind of was like low risk, high reward type of thing. And I just feel like the Nats are kind of going that route. But I feel like with some of the players that the Nats have, but you know, with Castro and Bell, like Castro, Bell, and now with Bell, and also Schwarber, like these are players grouped up with Turner, Soto, Hopefully Robles steps up. Carter Kimboom can kind of, you know, to keep progressing. Those are these vet, well, young vets, not really vets, but you know what I mean, young vets can help those guys get better. And as a group, I feel like they have a great opportunity to be champs again with that type of lineup. If they if everything goes the way it should, it could go.
It's interesting, you know. Yeah, coming into this season as a Nats fan, I'm not bullish on the sense that I'm like, oh yeah, we're like going to win 96 games and get back to the playoffs. Like, I don't know. You know, this could go. I could see a world where the Nats win 90 plus games. I could see a world where the Nats win 70 games. Wow, you know, it's just a lot of it. It's just it's all going to boil down to their starting four pitchers, and their health. You know. It, you know, last year, everything that could have gone wrong more or less went wrong. You know, Strasburg barely pitched, and when he did, he was hurt and ineffective. Sanchez was awful, and kind of maybe he was at the end. He turned back into a pumpkin. He was, maybe he's at the end of his career. And, you know, when you look at the Nats, you know, if Strasburg comes back and is good, and if Scherzer has one more good, dominant year with Corbin, and if John Lester can give you – you know, if John Lester can fill that Sanchez role from 2019, you look at that and you're like, all right, that's great. And then, you know, one of the other between like Fetty and Ross, you know, Austin Voth, you know, you know, they have enough, you know, and then we have some younger guys coming up, you know, like you could fill a fifth starter out of that. You know, if the rotation holds, and yeah, you say someone like a, you know, Carter Kimboom could take a step up, or if he doesn't, you know, maybe they could have a mid-season acquisitions like they did in 2019 when they brought Parra in and Cabrera. You know, maybe they could find a veteran to play third base if Kimboom doesn't work out. You could see how this could work, and obviously, you know, they have that championship medal, and Davey Martinez does have a knack for, you know, maybe the first 15 games of the season don't go great for him, but he seems to find a way to put it together and get the team on the same page. Even last year, they were playing really well at the end, and I think if they had an 80 game season last year, they probably would have made the playoffs. So there's reasons to be optimistic, but this is certainly not a season as a Nats fan. It's not like that year where Bryce Harper was like, where's my ring? I mean, I don't know. They might make the playoffs, they might not. It's there's a lot of things in the air this year.
You're listening to the Urban Sports Scene Now, part of Sports Journey. Right now we have Talk Nats, Kevin Nibley on the line. So you mentioned John Lester. This is a guy, actually, I think this is an awesome signing. Again, one of the, I think, low risk, high rewards type of signings. Yeah. It's a guy that you pair if everybody's healthy, and knowing what his makeup is and his build in terms of postseason play, he's your fourth starter. If he is I want to say John Lester, he's the A version of John Lester. Say if he was the B level of John Lester, does this make this Washington Nationals staff the best staff in the National League? Forget National League, in all of baseball.
It depends. You know, all of baseball might be hard to say. I mean, gosh, the Dodgers, what they just did.
Yeah, I know. That was Bauer.
That's gonna be hard. But, you know, I think it could make them great. I mean, again, you know, if Scherzer and Strasburg can be that 1-2 on the level they were in 2019, that solves a lot of problems. And then, you know, if Corbin can slot in, you know, and not have that pressure, like last year, Strasburg was out right away. Mm-hmm. So, and, you know, it was like Corbin maybe had a little more on his shoulders. You know, if you get Strasburg and Scherzer doing well, and then Corbin in is the third, and then really what you need from Lester, you don't need him to go back to his prime years. You just need a guy, kind of what Anibal Sanchez did in 2019. You know, he can throw five, maybe six innings on a good night, but, you know, keep you in the game. You know, too many games last year, you know, the starting pitching did not keep them in the game, and you're already down 5-1 in like the third inning, and you're burning out your, and also when that happens, aside from just losing the game, you start burning out your bullpen, and that adds up over time. And I think the Nats had like 10 blown saves in 60 games last year, something like that. And that happens because, you know, you're overusing the bullpen and it starts to screw everything up. So yeah, Lester doesn't necessarily need to be the A version of himself, but yes, the B version of himself, meaning low four to four and a half ERA, you know, eat innings, keep you in the game. You know, this offense hopefully will be good this year. So, you know, just kind of keep you in it. And the bullpen hopefully should be good this year. And, you know, we just didn't get a lot from the starting pitching last season. So hopefully it's been solidified a little bit, and we won't be having to go to the bullpen in the fourth inning. Exactly. So
no, I just feel like Lester is it's a fit. You know what I mean? Like when you look at because of the temperament of some of the starters, you have to me they're so intense. Strauss is intense, but you don't see it because he's quiet. But you know he's intense because he's just so focused. Mm-hmm. We all know the Max is uber intense. He's focused and he's a pit bull out there. And Lester just fits that whole mold. You know what I mean? Like,
yeah,
he fits it. It's just a good fit. Sometimes certain pitchers they go into a staff and it's like, he's a good pitcher, but you're worried about if it's a good fit to what that personality of the personality of the pitching staff. Like when I was younger, when like Greg Maddux came from Chicago to the Braves, it was a good fit because he just fit the mold of what those Avery, Glavin, Smoltz. It was a perfect fit. Like those, they all had the same temperament. So I just feel like with the Nats, these guys have the same temperament. Like Lester is a bulldog. Like he's a guy that when you want it back in it, regardless of in his prime, you wanted him to have the ball because you just felt so confident that he was a big game pitcher and he wanted the moment. And all lack of a better term, he wanted to smoke. Same here with the other two individuals. They want like Strasburg, Scherzer. They want the smoke. So like I think it's just a great fit. To be honest with you, when I heard they got that sign, they got John Lester, I was like, okay, well he might be up there in age. He may not be the same John Lester, but you know what? In terms of personality, moxie, yeah, it's a perfect fit.
Yeah, and he has that familiarity with Davey Martinez. Mm-hmm. I mean, so same with Kyle Schwarber, maybe a lesser noted move this off season is we changed pitching coaches. Mm-hmm. We brought in I think it's Hickey, the guy used to be the Cubs pitching coach. If that's wrong, people I'm talking to will kill me for that. But it's been a long day. But yeah, but so he's familiar with the pitching coach and Davey Martinez, and that means a lot. You know, it's the same like in a football. You know, when you coach brings a quarterback he's worked with before,
exactly.
It's like they don't have to get to know each other. Mm-hmm. They know what they expect. They've worked together. They're comfortable, and hopefully that should pay dividends on the field.
Definitely. Hey, Kevin, we appreciate having you on. Before I let you go, let our listeners know about, again, Talk Nats. I mean, they heard the show. They probably know about it anyway, but I want you to say it again, talk about it again, and also how they can catch you, Talk Nats on social media and how they can catch you on social media.
Yeah, no, thanks, guys. I really appreciate it. So Talk Nats, it's just talknats.com. It's a great site if you're a really serious Nats fan, really great community. You get really in-depth stuff. You're probably not going to necessarily get reading the post or other, it's like very, you go on Talk Nats, you'll know like the entire minor league roster all the way down to like the A-ball team. It's a very good hardcore site. They're on Twitter at Talk Nats. I'm on Twitter at K_Nibley. And I do a podcast every so often for Talk Nats. It's called the Talk Nats podcast. Mm-hmm. You can catch on Twitter. Also completely devoid of sports, I do a movie podcast called Kevin and Brendan Give Notes. That's on Twitter at @give_notes. So all of these are pretty fun things to check out. And thank you all for having me. I really appreciate it.
Hey, Kevin, anytime. Hopefully we'll have you during the season. A bunch of times during the season.
Yeah, no, I'd love to come back anytime. Take care, guys.
Take care. Thanks, Kev.
Yeah.
All right. That's Kevin Nibley from Talk Nats. Make sure you check out the content at talknats.com. All right, man. Great show.
Yes, sir.
You know what I'm saying? Great show, as always. You know what I mean? Another awesome show. So make sure you guys subscribe to our podcast on Stitcher, Spotify, iTunes, TuneIn, iHeartRadio, and also Google Podcasts. Just search the Urban Sports Scene. Also tweet us at Urban Sports Scene and hit us up on our Urban Sports Scene Facebook page. And make sure you check out Sports Journey at sportsjourney.com for all your DMV sports content. It's been a great show, Ray. You got anything you want to say before I like close this show out? John Wall is down 50-60 for all
John
the John
Lester,
Wall
you
fans.
You just closed it.
I just closed it. All right, I'm letting y'all know that John Wall is down to the Pelicans 50-63 for all you John Wall fans. Cause I had to do that for my man Ray. You know what I'm saying? Cause Twitter is live right now with John Wall.
You know I like John. You know
I know
like
you
John
do,
Wall.
Man. You know it's I'm just, messing with you. Messing
I feel like a lot of them came out the woodwork. I feel like. Once he left, like I didn't see this much John Wall love when he was here.
Bruh, I know you ain't lying. I saw nothing but hate for real. Now it's all love. I felt I had to defend John Wall here. Now everybody
fans
loves him.
Are so fake.
Yeah, I know.
Exactly.
You know what I'm saying? It's crazy, dog. But anyway, you've been listening to the Urban Sports Scene for ages. You dig? Deuces. A mega. Lead us out, big homie.